We'll do it live! Fuck it!
Good evening and welcome to the Cosmic Highway Patrol. I am your host, Matt Chouinard. Thank you for joining me. Coming to you from the outskirts of Brevard County, Florida, USA, in the middle of the summer. I hope you're staying cool wherever you're at. Tonight, we're going to discuss the stranger side of the Vietnam War. What comes to your mind when you hear Vietnam? Apocalypse Now, Full Metal Jacket, Fortunate Son, All Along the Watchtower, or a multitude of other great songs that came from that time. Perhaps a friend or family member who served. When I hear Vietnam, I think of grainy war footage of guys shooting M60s out of the side of Hueys, firefights in the jungle, howitzers firing at an unseen enemy, and B-52s dropping tens of thousands of pounds of bombs on the countryside, and Hendrix. Lots and lots of Hendrix. The 1960s were a time of revolution, chaos, and social upheaval. In no place was this more evident than Vietnam. From fighting the French colonialists in the First Indochina War from 1946 to 1954, to the Communist North fighting the Democratic South, with mass executions, guerrilla warfare, assassinations, and demonstrations, it was absolute chaos to say the least. Fighting and turmoil lasted in this particular area for decades. U.S. involvement began around 1955 when President Eisenhower sent advisors to help train the South Vietnamese to fight the commies. So at this point, McCarthyism was going strong in the States, and the embers of communist rule were in the air, sure to create a wildfire wherever they may land. Nowhere on earth was this more of a threat than in Southeast Asia. With Russia to the north and China to the west, South Vietnam was the last bastion of democracy in the Asian continent. So let's fast forward to about 1964, 2 years past the signing of Kennedy's Foreign Assistance Act and Operation Ranch Hand. The USS Maddox was supposedly fired upon by the North Vietnamese in the Gulf of Tonkin. I personally am skeptical of the validity of this particular attack, but I digress. Within 6 months, Operation Rolling Thunder began in a show of force in hopes of compliance from Hanoi. And this didn't work, as Rolling Thunder lasted from March 1965 to November 1968. All right, quick side note. I'm a car guy. I love machinery. I've watched a ton of war footage in the last couple weeks, and without question, the F-4 Phantom II is my new favorite fighter jet. I mean, for the time period, it's about as American as it gets. It's like a muscle car for aerial combat. It's like a Mach 1 that'll do Mach 2. But the real rock star of Operation Rolling Thunder, Operation Linebacker, and countless other missions was the Boeing B-52 Stratofortress. Known to crew and maintenance personnel alike as the BUFF, which stood for Big Ugly Fat Fucker. I personally find it neither fat nor ugly, but it is big. With a wingspan of 185 feet and a length of 159 feet and a tail height of 40 feet, just about doubled the size of the B-17 from World War II. Built from 1952 to 1962, a total of 742 bombers were built. Okay, keep in mind the average house weighs between 80,000 and 160,000 pounds for the next part. Dry weight of the B-52 is 183,500 pounds. The max takeoff weight is 488,000 pounds, roughly the weight of about 800 full-size American pickups. Max fuel capacity is 317,000 pounds or 47,975 gallons. Which is enough to top off about 1,703 Cadillac Escalades. And it'll need every gallon to feed all 8 Pratt & Whitney turbojets to fly at speeds of up to 630 miles an hour. As I said a minute ago, it was produced until 1962, meaning the newest BUFF flying is no less than 61 years old. Every plane still flying has been upgraded, maintained, rebuilt, parked, refurbished, and flown since Kennedy was in office. In the 1960s, popular beehive hairdo was nicknamed the B-52 due to its resemblance of the nose cone of the bomber, ultimately giving Athens, Georgia hitmakers, the B-52s, their name. It's pretty crazy. Didn't know that. And they're projected to remain in service until at least 2050. I guess if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Anyway, back to it. About this time, Americans arrive in Da Nang in the form of 3,500 Marines. Within a year, almost 400,000 U.S. military personnel are stationed in the Land of Timeless Charm. With all this happening in such a relatively small area, I believe there has to be some kind of hell-hot, jet-black negative energy lurking in the jungle, just laying in wait. So what did they see out there? We watched what looked like wings, like bats, only it was gigantic compared to what a regular bat would be. After it got close enough so we could see what it was, it looked like a woman, a naked woman. She was black. Her skin was black. Her body was black. The wings were black. Everything was black. But it glowed. It glowed in the night, kind of a greenish cast to it. She started going over us, and we still didn't hear anything. She was right above us when she got over the top of our heads. She was maybe 6 or 7 feet up. We watched her go straight over the top of us, and she still didn't make any noise flapping her wings. She blotted out the moon once. That's how close she was to us. And dark. Looked like pitch black then. But we could still define her because she just glowed. Real bright-like. And she started going past us straight towards our encampment. As we watched her, she got about 10 feet or so away from us. And we started to hear her wings flap. And it sounded, you know, like regular wings flapping, and she just started flying off, and we watched her for quite a while. That was the account of Earl Morrison and others while on guard duty in August of 1969. While youths in America were seeing something similar on the brown acid at Woodstock, Tex Watson believes he's the devil on angel trumpets, all happening at the same time, Earl was possibly seeing Mothman's sister in Southeast Asia. I don't know. I believe there's something to it. At least possibly. It's not less credible than the Mothman of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, which was sighted between November 66 and December 67. What do you think? A glowing jet black flying naked woman flying out of the depths of the jungle to be seen by a handful of servicemen only to fly back into the dark depths of the unknown never to be seen again? Or could it be something else? A giant misidentified bat or bird? But it glowed, perhaps with some kind of bioluminescence. What do you think? Let me know at CosmicHighwayPatrol@gmail.com or Cosmic Highway Patrol on Instagram. Moving right along. I learned some Latin recently, mainly the phrase non gratum anus rodentum, translated, not worth a rat's ass. That was the motto of the U.S. and Australian infantrymen known as the Tunnel Rats. You want to talk about balls the size of a fully loaded Chrysler, check these guys out. Throughout the war, the Viet Cong and the NVA used a vast tunnel system, estimated to span thousands of miles through the jungles, under the villages, and into town centers. Deep underground, this tunnel system contained hospitals, sleeping quarters, supply storage, and kitchens. Tunnels all had ventilation shafts and wells. Getting to these places was an entirely different story. If and when you find the trapdoor entrance on the jungle floor or the bottom of a sewage-filled hog pen, you're now ready to enter the belly of the beast. The tunnels are narrow and short, and they smell like shit. Tunnel sizes varied from 2 to 4 feet wide and 3 to 5 feet tall, sometimes smaller. Tunnel rats slide through these holes armed with nothing more than a pistol and a flashlight. Sometimes a gas mask, sometimes not. Once you get your bearings, desperately ignoring the claustrophobia, you stare into the black hole in the dirt. Seems to go on to oblivion. What's in there? Who's in there? If previous reports were true, there's a tripwire around here somewhere, just waiting to be tripped, just waiting to dump any number of venomous shit crawling around this godforsaken shithole jungle nation. Spiders, scorpions, centipedes, never mind the goddamn bamboo vipers hanging from the ceiling. Keep crawling. The flashlight will lead the way. Watch for drops. Watch for traps. Pungy sticks covered in VC shit. Damn, this place stinks. Just keep crawling. Just plant the C4 and get out. Needless to say, The tunnels were a place of misery for those unfortunate enough to go and trip a wire or be ambushed by an enemy combatant. There's a story floating around the internet, Reddit to be exact, told by a former tunnel rat of a particular experience that is, to say at least, a little strange. This story was posted on Reddit around 2016 by Redditor CatFaceO. It goes a little something like this. I've kept my mouth shut for almost 50 years. Why the hell would I start talking now? Well, friends, terminal cancer will do that to you. Shit you thought you'd take to the grave suddenly becomes shit you desperately want to tell someone. Anyone. I won't bore you with a long lament about my time in Vietnam. It was shitty. It was shitty for everyone involved. It was particularly shitty for me as I was 5'3". If you don't know what being particularly short during the Vietnam War entailed, let me fill you in. You arrive in country and a senior officer points at you and says, "You'd be a good fit for the tunnel commandos. Want to join?" Now technically it's a question, as service in those platoons was voluntary, but it sure as shit didn't feel like a question. Felt like an order. And so that was my burden for the war, to be a tunnel rat, climbing down into deep, dank, dangerous tunnels filled with people and animals who wanted to kill me. Usually we operated in the huge Cu Chi tunnel complex near Saigon, but not on this day. On this day we were ordered to investigate a tunnel complex way up north, west of Da Nang. Two of us were sent in the tunnel that day, myself and Benoit. Now usually black guys manage to avoid becoming tunnel rats on account of them being so tall, but Benoit was burdened with the double misfortune of being short and black during the Vietnam War, a curse I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. I was first into the hole and Benoit followed. We both had our Model 39s, some C4, our wits, and not much else. If you're wondering why we carried a small caliber Model 39, go fire a Colt 45 in a narrow tunnel and come back to me. The last guy who tried that got a ticket home with blood pouring out of his ears. We crawled for what felt like an age. The tunnel was a tight fit, which meant it probably was freshly dug. It also stank something foul. That usually meant either spoiled food or some poor VC bastard died down there and was left to rot. After about 40 minutes of crawling in total silence, I saw the tunnel ahead open into a room. I tapped Benoit on the head with my foot. I heard him ready his pistol. I climbed down into the open chamber, pointing my pistol at the shadows. The room was dimly lit by a small oil lamp. It was also deserted. We took a moment to adjust. It was the longest single tunnel segment either of us have ever crawled through. It also had no traps, which was unusual. Where was everyone who dug the damn thing? Save for the lamp hanging from the roof and the canvas tarp on the opposite wall, the room was empty. I approached the tarp and used my pistol to move it aside. Behind the tarp was a stone staircase leading down. "A stone staircase this far underground?" I whispered to Benoit. "VC didn't build this. This is old, very old. Older than America old," Benoit whispered back with fear in his voice. "We've come this far. We have to keep going," I replied. We both walked slowly down the narrow staircase. Our flashlights had red lenses, and I swear an illuminated staircase looked like we were descending into hell. The staircase was almost as deep as the tunnel was long. Finally, I saw the staircase blocked by another tarp. Light was coming from the other side. I moved aside the tarp with my pistol. My finger trembled on the trigger. My eyes lit up. My heart raced. I almost pulled the trigger, but I didn't. Something made me pause. The room had at least 10 people in it. None of them armed. I pointed my pistol at the group and illuminated them with my flashlight. They didn't respond. They just stood there rocking gently forward and back. "Benoit, don't shoot. There's people in here, but there's something wrong with them." I stepped into the tiny room, which was lit only by small candles. Benoit followed. We both shone our flashlights at people. They paid no attention. They continued to rock gently forward and back. I shone my flashlight on one of their faces. I clicked my fingers. She didn't respond. Her clothes told me she was VC. They were all VC. 3 women and 7 men, all gently rocking forward and back. Not a care in the fucking world. Their eyes were a solid color. This color I can't really say, as I could only illuminate them with my red flashlight. Benoit motioned with his flashlight to the corner. Their rifles all sat in a pile, badly rusted. Jesus Christ, Benoit, how long have these poor fuckers been down here? I don't think Jesus Christ frequents this establishment, came Benoit's terrified response in his thick Cajun accent. I show my light in the front of the room. The VC were all facing a small altar. I walked toward it. On the simple stone plinth stood a gold statue illuminated by several candles. The statue was ornately crafted. It was of a beautiful naked woman, the top half anyway. The bottom half was something like an octopus. Dozens of tiny gold tentacles that had been meticulously crafted to the woman's torso instead of legs. The statue had some writing at the base, a writing I didn't recognize. I reached out to pick the statue up and take a better look, but Benoit shouted, "Stop! Don't touch it." I retracted my hand about an inch from the statue. "We need to leave this place. Quickly," Benoit said as he put his hand on my shoulder. "Are we just going to leave him like this?" I said, as I shone my light in their eyes. "We'll plant the C4 charges, put them on a 90-minute timer," he said. He was already removing the C4 from the pouch on his belt. "They're unarmed," I implored, turning to Benoit. "These people are dead, maybe worse than dead. I saw something like this once before, at home in the bayou." I didn't argue any longer. We planted the C4 charges in a rush, set the timers for 90 minutes, and ran up the stone staircase as fast as we could. It felt like a lifetime till we reached the small room with the lamp. I climbed into the tunnel. Benoit followed. Suddenly, we could hear a woman's voice faintly calling from behind us. "Ignore it. Keep moving," Benoit shouted from behind me. I didn't need to be told. I wasn't going back. It was the longest crawl of my life. I saw daylight and kept crawling even though my hands were raw and bloodied. I emerged into the light of day, gasped, fresh air. Benoit followed. We warned the others about the C4 charges, but told them nothing else. Benoit and I sat in total silence at the tunnel entrance, waiting, praying. The ground shook. A dull thud was heard, and a spray of dirt emerged from the tunnel. We both breathed a sigh of relief. It is only after experience like that that you ask yourself the small questions. To this day, I still ask myself, who the fuck was keeping the candles lit in that damn room? So what do you think? Even if it's not true, it's still creepy as hell. Literal hell. So, ever hear of Bigfoot? The Yeti? Sasquatch? How about the Vietnamese rock apes? Standing about 6 feet tall and covered with reddish-brownish hair, they are often compared to and are often mistaken for an orangutan. It's said they live and travel in groups, their habitat being in the far reaches of the jungle, far from even the most remote village, making human interaction a rarity. And though it could be speculated they are nothing more than misidentified orangutans, this is unlikely due to the fact that, though orangutans did live in Vietnam at one point, they have been extinct in that area for several thousand years. Perhaps the fighting which knew no bounds stumbled into a community of a species that had gone previously undiscovered until that point. Both sides of the conflict reported sightings and interactions with the rock ape, which became frequent enough to inspire General Hoang Minh Tha to mount an expedition in 1974 to find, capture, and kill at least one of the apes. This expedition, however, proved to be a fruitless venture. On the other side, American GIs reported rock apes having no fear of humans. This may possibly be because the rock apes' stature, they don't see humans as a threat. It was even reported by a group of Marines that they were attacked by several rock apes. The rock ape got its name from its propensity for throwing rocks at soldiers, including one grenade that was thrown at it, only to be thrown back at the soldier from where it came. There are a myriad of possible explanations for this one, ranging from battle fatigue, the use of hallucinogenic drugs, to it just being an elaborate hoax perpetrated by the U.S. soldiers, the VC, NVA, and villagers living in the area in which these sightings occurred. On the other side of the argument, there are some who believe it's an undiscovered species, a human-animal hybrid, or a genetic experiment. The more ambitious few theorize the potential of being an extraterrestrial or multidimensional species. Either way, there's a place in Vietnam called Monkey Mountain where many sightings have taken place. So what do you think? Is it an undiscovered species living in solitude deep in the jungle, only to be seen by the few who call that area home? Or perhaps just a misidentified orangutan who found their way back to a place they haven't been for thousands of years? We'll never know the answer to the question until we have a rock ape, Sasquatch, Yeti, or skunk ape on a slab in a laboratory. The Merriam-Webster definition of psyops is military operations usually aimed at influencing the enemy's state of mind through non-combative means, such as distribution of leaflets. Now for something a little more terrestrial. Not so much paranormal as it was propaganda put forth by the U.S. military, Operation Wandering Soul was an effort by the U.S. forces to play on the Vietnamese superstition and folklore. The goal of Wandering Soul was to erode the VC will to fight, in hopes that they would drop their arms and run home. It was Vietnamese superstition that if those who died, be it in battle or elsewhere and not buried at home, would be doomed to walk the earth forever. It is said they could be contacted at the place on the anniversary that they died. Unfortunately, this didn't work as intended. On the night of February 10, 1970, the jungles of the Huao Naga province erupted in echoes of sobbing, screaming, and the mournful pleas to the living to leave the area and go home. Go home. It's hell. Save yourself and leave. Just imagine it. Hiding under the cover of darkness, waiting in position for the invaders. Out of the darkness you hear the drums of a Buddhist funeral march and wailing. Unearthly, disembodied wailing. Echoing through the trees, pure misery. Then out of the darkness, a young girl frantically calls to her father. The confused soul answers, not knowing if the voice calling to him is his wife or his daughter. To which he continues, he's here on earth, but he is dead. He is dead to all listening. He is in hell. He died a senseless death. To those still alive, go home. Home with your friends before you end up like me. This is what soldiers and villagers alike heard echoing through the trees and into the darkness. A dire warning from beyond the grave to leave now, while there's still a chance. This, however, had little success in crushing the enemy morale as hoped. It didn't help the recording was played through gigantic speakers on helicopters while leaflets were dropped throughout the countryside. However, a similar tactic of playing a recording of a tiger growling in the night spurred 150 Viet Cong to leave their post and escape into the jungle. Either way, it's creepy. A for effort, C minus for execution. So that's the paranormal side of Vietnam. It was a scary place at a scary time in history to be there. I couldn't imagine being some kid fresh out of high school with your whole life ahead of you, only to be drafted and sent to the jungles of Southeast Asia, a place that might as well have been another planet. But very similar to our homeland, the bird woman of Da Nang and the Mothman, the rock ape and the Sasquatch, or the manipulation by the governments to press the public into doing its bidding. And I'll be getting into that a little more in future episodes. Vietnam isn't any different from the U.S. from a paranormal cryptozoological standpoint. This stuff is happening all over the world, but I find paranormal happening during wartime particularly fascinating, from the Foo Fighters of World War II to the Angel of Mons during World War I. A lot of crazy things happen during turbulent times. So what do you think? Let me know. Questions, comments, thoughts, feelings. Send them to CosmicHighwayPatrol@gmail.com or Cosmic Highway Patrol on Instagram. I'd love to hear from you. This podcast is a DIY operation, so I'm figuring things out as I go. Bear with me, it gets better from here, I swear. Anyway, that's episode 2 down. Next week, we're headed to the high seas, where we'll talk about the deepest, darkest fears of the water, the ocean, sharks, barracudas, megalodons, or just water in general when we cover thalassophobia, submechanophobia, and megalohydrothalassophobia. 25 letters make up that last one, in case you were wondering. So watch Jaws and take a swim before next week. It's taillights and tire smoke for me. I'm out of here. Good night. Take care.